Here at Camera Eddie, we've got excessive force, wilding, downright police brutality, sexual harassment, wrongful death, sodomy, illegal mass arrest, fraternization, did we say police brutality, sexually harassing emails from official laptops, abuse of power, downright police brutality, Rodney King, 41 shots, killing the neighbor dog, downright police brutality, dereliction of duty, excessive use of force, wilding, sexually abusive emails, downright police brutality, unlawful mass arrest, violation of the Fourth Amendment, obstruction of due process, illegal surveillance administration. Administrative leave, paid suspension, and downright police brutality, because I'm Camera Eddie and all my photos are indicting.
My cog is hogging the beach. He's eating up every and each. He eats all the snails and inhales the quails and even the sandcastles, shovels and pails. My cog is hogging the beach. My cog is eating the trees, the bushes and all of the bees, the birds in the air and the crabs in your hair, and even the dogs are now empty of fleas. My cog is hogging the beach. My cog is eating the shops, the ones with the moms and the pops. He didn't stop there, he bought Walmart fair share, even firmed up the rights to the breathable air. My cog is hogging the beach. This song, in case you couldn't tell, is called My Cog is Hogging the Beach. My cog has ate up the land, he never even needed a hand. All the farms and the shores and the five and dime stores, with queries and worries and slurries and hurries. So listen to my story, you must understand, before it's too late and he eats all the sand. My cog is hogging the beach. My cog is now after you, he's willing to start with your shoe. Next is your ankle and both of your knees, but after your soul will no longer be free. I hear he's got eyes on a child or two. My cog is hogging the beach. I have a question for you. Would you rather be chowder or stew? This is my quarrel with clams. They multiply faster than yams. They consume and consume until then they presume and take flight for your room, eating all your perfume like a cog will do. You know how they are. When he chases your shoe and consumes it like stew, as soon as he reaches the coast with the beaches for any and eaches, my cog is hogging the beach. Hello. I'm DJ Michael Brew, and I sang that. Before I get into anything else, I must tell you, my ringtone has been Rage Against the Machine's Guerrilla Radio for more than a year now, and that is never going to change, just so you know. Good on ya, Crazy Frog Axel F, good on ya, Coldplay, and good on ya, Oasis, but rotten hell if you think I will ever buy into your consumeristic, corporatocratic, commercial, Bartolo Warneristic Sony-oni-oniistic bullcrap. Corporate media, corporate music, corporate government, file sys check, all of y'all, okay? Okay, get it, got it? Good. FSCK, the corporate media, is a presentation of ATI Zine along with Prime Anarchist Productions. This podcast will be broadcast on a webcast with a once-a-week deadline, and our goal will always be to keep it under 39 minutes so you can put two shows on a disc and hand it to someone who doesn't have internet. If we go long, please, edit us from the bottom up. Don't hate the media. File sys check the corporate media. All right, rather than headlines this week, I'm going to read you a couple things from ATI Zine, much more important in my not-so-humble opinion. Ready? Martin Geshwana. This will be pretty much a direct quote. The following was part of a speech he gave, and it was translated by Thomas Banyaka, also since passed away, and is just as pertinent, if not more so, as it was 10 years ago. Today, the American people are being taught how it feels to be held hostage. That is how we felt, having been held hostage up to the present day. In truth, everyone in that army is held hostage by the government. Young people who want to live a long life are forced to suffer in the Arabian desert. We know they're about to be burnt up in a war if they don't stop. It's up to the president to recall the troops he has sent to the Middle East. They must all be allowed to refuse this fate and return home. The Hopi are forbidden by their religion to join the army. It is especially urgent that all native people who have become involved come home right away. The source for that was Aksazni Notes, 22, number 6. Martin Geshwama used to be keeper of the Hopi Fire Clan tablet. Next up is a column I wrote for last week's zine called Leave It to the Onion. Are tasers safe? They asked people around the streets of Madison and Milwaukee, where they published from. Here go the results. Most security personnel defend the use of tasers, but Amnesty International said there have been more than 100 taser-related deaths since 2001. What do you think? Harold Wilson, sound producer, says, you wouldn't be complaining if tasers... I'm sorry. Take two. You wouldn't be complaining about tasers if you had a rubber bullet lodged within inches of your heart like me. Carl Gordon, police officer, says, if you're a cop, deadly force is the last thing you want to use. However, if you're a really twisted cop, a weapon that leaves a suspect flopping about like an epileptic puppy is dead bang perfect. Sam Williamson, sheet metal worker, says, I only hope this controversy doesn't affect my soon-to-be-launched National Family Fun franchise, Taser Tag. Mark Stuttgart, sales manager, says, as a man who wears a thick rubber gimp suit on his midnight visits to the nursing school, I have no problem with taser use. Systems and analyst Mary Watkins says, people complain that getting hit by a taser is really painful, but in reality, it doesn't hurt until your hypothalamus starts working again. And then lastly, Ellen Anderson, who's a chef, says, tasers are too much of a hazard. I guess the police will just have to go back to using tractor beams. Next up is a snippet from John Ross's Blind Man's Buff, number 72. There are always two ways to view the Zapatista reality. One is from Mexico City, where the political smog is as thick as the capital's bad air, making it really hard to see all the way to the Guatemalan border, in whose immediate bioregions the Zapatista rebellion has blossomed for the past decade and more. The other is from inside the Zapatista zone itself, where Mexico City and the Mal Gobierno, Spanish for bad government, are just as much of an obscure and far-off phantasm. The push and pull between the center and the periphery has been a constant subtext in this war against oblivion, and amazingly there have been moments when the EZLN has been able to wrest the initiative from the tyranny of the center. But since the final break with the Mal Gobierno and the Zapatistas' inwards turn, the attentions of most Mexicans have swiveled back to the capital, a city in which all power in Mexico is ultimately concentrated. Indeed, the titanic battle around AMLO's Desafuero is all about Mexico City being the center of power. For the EZLN to have paused in its daily chores to speak solidarity with the protests of millions of their compatriots was perhaps above all a gesture that, despite the rebels' strenuous efforts to assert control over their own destiny, demonstrates the Zapatistas are still a part of Mexico. And lastly, something to think about from July 6, 2002. I want you to hear this and then think about what happened shortly after that to that same person. Accusing the music industry of cheating artists, a charge that is quite true, Jackson says of Tommy Mottola, head of Sony Music, he's mean, he's a racist, and he's very, very, very devilish. On the same day, Jackson attended an anti-Sony rally in Manhattan. There the crowd chanted, down with Tommy Mottola, down with Tommy Mottola.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news relating to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Kimberly Cronick.
Controversy over the leadership at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and its crusade to make PBS and NPR look and sound more like Fox News is heating up on Capitol Hill. Democrats and the House of Representatives have formed a Future of Media Caucus, which sponsored an informal hearing on issues of media bias on May 24th. Event sponsor Congressman John Conyers, a Democrat from Michigan, released a study from the Congressional Research Service, which analyzed transcripts from several cable news programs and found that stories like Michael Jackson's court case received more substantive coverage than stories about voting irregularities in Ohio during the 2004 election, or the lack of evidence of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. David Brock, a former member of the conservative media machine who now runs the website Media Matters for America, which documents and debunks right-wing media misinformation, says it is not uncommon for presidents and their administrations to attempt to manipulate media coverage in a way most favorable to themselves.
The conservative goal appears to be for us to reach a point where there are blue state facts and red state facts, where there is simply no objective truth at all.
With regard to public broadcasting itself, two Democratic congressmen have written to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting Inspector General's office, asking it to investigate CPB Chairman Kenneth Tomlinson and his top staffers for actively working to tilt public radio and TV rightward. Representative David Obey of Wisconsin says he signed the letter not because of the specific partisanship of the current controversy, but because partisanship in any form is inappropriate at the CPB.
No one's squawking about conservative or liberal. What I want is to see that the law is adhered to, and the law says that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is supposed to keep its cotton-picking nose out of programming and out of politics.
For his part, Tomlinson continues his mission to deliberalize public broadcasting, even though his own surveys show that claim to be groundless. Nevertheless, he's quietly moving ahead with a proposal to critique National Public Radio for perceived pro-Arab bias in its Middle East coverage, another unproven claim. Tomlinson also chairs the Broadcasting Board of Governors, which oversees foreign propaganda projects like the Voice of America and various broadcast outlets in Iraq and the Middle East, and he's recruiting staff from there to work at CPB. At least one PBS TV station manager is circulating a letter among colleagues demanding that Tomlinson and his cabal be sacked for embarking on a, quote, sad, ridiculous witch hunt at a time when we should be standing together to make sure that public broadcasting is funded adequately.
Bill Moyer's broadside against the conservative attack on public broadcasting at the National Conference for Media Reform has whipped right-wing echo chambers on cable TV and talk radio into a frenzy. The following is a short selection of what Moyer said and how conservative pundits have reacted. When Moyers chastised journalists for failing to speak truth to power,
"We're seeing unfold a contemporary example of the age-old ambition of power and ideology to punish the journalists who tell the stories that make princes and priests uncomfortable."
Rush Limbaugh responded with this rejoinder, "I'd be embarrassed if I were Bill Moyers. I'd close my mouth. The things coming out of his mouth today are literally insane." When Moyers called the contemporary construction of objectivity into question,
"Those rules divide the world and allow journalists to pretend they have done their job if instead of reporting the truth behind the news, they merely give each side an opportunity to spin the news."
Conservative Communications Center and Parents Television Council founder Brent Bozell called it a Castro-length address at an anti-capitalist confab, screaming with one mind and one bleeding heart. And when Moyers related his long experience in the public broadcasting world to the point of being present at its conception,
"As a young policy assistant to President Johnson, I attended in 1964 my first meeting to discuss the future of public broadcasting. I know firsthand that the Public Broadcasting Act was meant to provide an alternative to commercial television and to reflect the diversity of the American people."
And Coulter tarred him a paranoid megalomaniac and described his comments as reading fan letters to himself aloud and talking about how he was being persecuted by Republicans. Note that none of the criticisms of Moyers cites a single fact to back up their attacks.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a joint production of the Illinois Initiative for Media Policy Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization dedicated to media democracy. For more information, visit our website at freepress.net.
Yes, what else? 4 clips from the telephone, we got that. And next up, we've got Patrick Moore's Weekly World Whalen Word of the Week. I pull up Adobe Acrobat. This is the Hosshead Companion, a guide to the musical works of Waylon Jennings. Patrick wrote this book. It's pre-published. It's in PDF form. There are pictures, text, content. I should tell you about content. Maybe you already know. If you're making podcasts, I bet you know all about content. Or some of you might not. All right. 7-inch RCA labels. Black Dog, Dog on Side. Used from 65 to 68 on singles 85XX through 9561, as well as original pressings of gold standard single 4470797. Don't try to call that phone number. I already did. Jenny does not live there. Red label, used only on RCA's gold standard series of reissue singles from 70 to 76. Gold standard singles carry prefixes of 447, AMAO, or GB. Black label, used from 77 to 78. On original release solo singles, but used on gold standard issues, reissues of original Flying W label singles until 1986. Now, J.D.'s album, The Story Behind the Most Frequently Issued Waylon Songs. Although it has been out of print for almost 40 years, the album J.D.'s is one of the most common Waylon albums in existence. However, it should be understood that many of these reissues are of questionable legality. This will attempt to lay to rest misconceptions about this record. One misconception, though widely circulated, is this is titled Waylon Jennings at J.D.'s, giving some a false impression this was a live recording. That honor goes to The Restless Kid Live at J.D.'s, a genuinely live album recorded at the nightclub in 64 and issued by Bear Family in 2000. Like the Beatles' Polydor sessions or Willie Nelson's demos for Pamper Music, these recordings will be of interest not because, oh, you know what, I called up this page and it happens to be one of the pages I already read in either Podcast 2 or Podcast 3. So just refer to that as I scroll down for something new to read you. This Hosshead Companion is so fun to read. You can read it from beginning to end or just pull up a page or two, kind of like Cosmic Trigger by Robert Anton Wilson. Just grab a page and read it. And, man, I should print this out and just throw it in the bathroom. And then every once in a while you just kind of pick it up and read a snippet or two. Waylon, Dreamin' My Dreams, that's an album I used to own. Here's one I've never owned before. Get Into Waylon Jennings, the fabled promo LP. Side A has Norwegian Wood, This Bird Has Flown. Love of the Common People, The Choking Kind, Only Daddy That'll Walk the Line, Brown Eyed Handsome Man, MacArthur Park, the 33rd of August, Singer of Sad Song. There we go. Honky Tonk Woman, If I Were a Carpenter, The Taker, Tomorrow Night in Baltimore, Loving Her Was Easier Than Anything I'll Ever Do Again, Casey's Last Ride, Good Hearted Woman, and Do No Good Woman. And there's just a side note. I'll end with this. Norwegian Wood, This Bird Has Flown, is presented in reprocessed stereo. Now, you might remember, these were the good old days when a record was a record. And buying and selling them was fun. Do that with a CD. That's about all I got now for voiceovers. I should space out an ending, huh? All right. Send us audio feedback. No, don't Skype me. Call 860-887-2600, extension 5293, and leave it there. We'll go right to Wave and get it up there ASAP. I'd like to suddenly give a random shout-out to the peeps at Odeo.com. And also shout-outs to Rampart Radio. Yes, you heard right. Rampart Radio. R-A-M-P-A-R-T-R-A-D-I-O. Google that and find it. You'll love what you listen to. All right. I'll have to find my poems for the Pentagon because my coffee notes here say read a couple of poems. So listen up. Hear me walking across the room. In the tradition of the all-new genre of podcasting, you can call this a sound-seeing tour. I'm over by my bed, pulling up my JanSport book bag. Pulling out a chapbook. And as soon as I have it, I will read it to you. Now, I was going to go for Marco's homemade poem, but I want to read one from a chapbook called 11. Then I'll do poems for the Pentagon. 11 is a homemade book of poems for sale as a A homemade book of poems for sale as a fundraiser for a trip to Georgia and back. Consider a donation of $4 or more. I did well by that, by the way. I'll read you Gnome poem. That's spelled G-N-O-M-E. When it all hits too close to home and the drug is so big it's surrounding you, as the machine eats two-thirds of your soul, and since everyone except you seems so crazily into their disconnected sanity, insisting that if you'll only salute Big Brother, all will play out as it should. When the world is ordering up anew, as well, all of Alexandria begins imploding like a gigantic, sucking, swirling sinkhole. You begin to think that metaphor is all that is left. It's from a book called 11. I will not explain why the book was called 11. You can probably figure it out yourself. Now, this is from Poems for the Pentagon, a homemade chapbook. This is called Checkpoint. Showing your credentials on your way from Ramallah to Jerusalem. Showing you have no bombs on your way from Ramallah to Jerusalem. Feeling Salvador on your way from Ramallah to Jerusalem, biting your nails clear off on your way from Ramallah to Jerusalem. Now, this is called Evans Army Hospital, poem to be developed, The Nurse in the Burqa. She taught me the differences between Shiite, Sunni, Sikh, and even Baha'i and American Islamist. She monitored my morphine. She told me about her army husband, stationed in Kuwait. I don't remember her name. Should have written it down. You might say she saved my life, but I will definitely say she saved my soul. The nurse in the burqa nurtured my soul. Thank you. FSCK, the corporate media. News you can use every Tuesday for when they abuse and try to put the screws to use. And we're ending with the entire 17 minutes of Dave Weiner's Morning Coffee Notes from 26 May. I think you'll see why. Bye-bye.
Good morning. This is the Morning Coffee Notes for May 26, 2005. I guess it's time to try to clear the air on the sort of early days of podcasting and what changed in January. And then, you know, sort of how I'd like to go on from here. First, I'd like to say that I don't want to, like, I'm not looking for any kind of revenge or retribution. I don't want an apology from anyone. Frankly, I don't know exactly what I want. I do know, though, that there's a lot of confusion, and I'm frankly quite confused too. And that's because there's two people, two sides to something. There is a dispute, and there are two sides to it, and I only have my side of it. And so I don't know the whole story, and I'll say that right up front. But what do I know? I know that up until the time I went to Miami in the beginning of January, that that I had a deal with Adam Curry, and you can like hear about that deal. You can listen to a Trade Secrets podcast that we did. Here, I'm going to go look it up right now. Hold on. So it's at secrets.scripting.com. And right, and it's December 9th, 2004. And it's a 47-minute podcast in which we talk about the plans for the business that we want to start, or the sort of ideas that are kicking around for that business. There were basically four areas. One was content tools. Two was readers and aggregators. Things like iPods and iPod-alikes, the iPodders, which, you know, were basically derivatives of the aggregators that people use for RSS. That was number two. Number three was content. Number four was bandwidth. And if you think about it, one, two, and three were basically the three elements in the blogging world, you know, content tools, aggregators, and the content itself. And we added the fourth because in the case of podcasting, bandwidth, where it isn't really an issue in blogging, is a big issue because the things that you're serving are so big. And these were the things that I was thinking about at the time. And that list basically was a list that I generated. And if you listen to the podcast, you'll hear that I'm doing most of the talking. And in fact, if you go back through the podcasts through the fall and the summer of 2004, you'll hear that mostly the vision of podcasting is what's in my podcasts. And what's in Adam's podcasts are, I guess, an implementation. maybe to be generous to him, the implementation. It was sort of like two sides of the coin, and both sides were very important. And all the while, though, he was getting the credit. The press was all about what he was doing and not about what I was doing. And I would talk to Adam from time to time about this and say, you know, I really don't think I can continue doing this. This was during the fall. I said, I really don't think I can continue supporting your work and keeping the servers running and writing the software and all the rest of that stuff when, like, if they're, like, all the credit's going to you. And he had said something to me that rang really true, which was, he said, you know, technology is worth $1 million, but a brand is worth $1 billion. And, or let's say, if technology is worth $1 million, then the brand is worth $1 billion. And actually, he was quoting Ron Blum when he said this. And Ron Blum was right, and Adam was right. And it's something that I had come to learn, that that basically, you know, you can gain some satisfaction out of having been right with the technology, but if everybody thinks that somebody else is the brand of that, they're going to make all the money, and you know, you're not going to end up with a whole lot. So that was why we struck the 50-50 deal, and that's why Adam needed my help. And in fact, frankly, I think that if you sort of look to see what he's been doing since, you know, through 2005, I think you can see that he still needs my help. That the vision of where podcasting is going is still something, or what its potential is something that lives inside of me, not inside of him. He's not the visionary. He's not. He's a disc jockey. And, you know, to his credit, Ron Blum is a visionary also. I don't like Ron Blum's vision. I think Ron's vision is dark. I think it's old. I think it harkens, he's trying to apply the logic that he learned in the 20th century and trying to apply that to something new, which doesn't follow those rules. And he's making a lot, you know, well, whatever. But so, so through the fall, I put in all this effort and then left Seattle, went to Miami, and my plan was to relocate wherever we decided this business that we were going to start was to start. In other words, I was leaving Seattle, and I was going to Miami, packed up everything I had, and we were going to plan out the business, and then from there, I would either hang out in Miami for a while or go to New York, is where we thought the business would actually be, in all likelihood. And all the details of the different meetings, it was really confusing. And I think Adam's pretty much said that. And it's true. The meetings were confusing. And I have my own theories about how the personalities were, you know. But since there were now three personalities involved, forget it. I mean, it's impossible. I can only give you the point of view of one. I can tell you, though, that at the end of it, Adam told me that he wasn't going to go into business. And I didn't believe him. And I said as much. I said, it really looks to me like you're going into business. And he said, no, I'm not going to business. So there's nothing for us to split 50-50 on, which kind of left me in kind of a lurch. I didn't know. Okay, great. I thought we were going into business, but Adam says he's not going into business. So, and then I went north and not feeling very good about this because I really felt like I had been lied to. Because everything looked like they were starting a business. And then I posted something on Scripting News. I forget exactly the date, where I said pretty simply that, you know, I'm not going to business with Adam Curry. Because why did I say that? Well, because I had said that we were going into business. I had said it publicly. I had said it on December 9th in that Trade Secrets. And I kind of, when as soon as I know that I'm not doing it, I feel like I'm obligated to say so. So I did. And then Then I started hearing from people that they were having meetings with Adam about, and phone conversations and Skype calls, and with Ron Bloom, and about like signing up and becoming part of this company that they were starting. And so I sent Adam a few emails and I said, geez, Adam, it looks like you're starting a company. And he didn't respond. And I was hosting at the time, was hosting Dawn and Drew's content on one of my servers. And I had to talk with them about something. And Drew and I talked about the dealings that they were having. And I told Drew that Adam had told me that they weren't going into business. And, well, it was really clear that they were going into business. So I sent Adam an email, a copy to Drew, and I said, it looks to me like you're going into business. And Adam wrote back and said, well, I know what our deal is. And I said, great, well, tell me what it is. And he said, I'll tell you after I come through the U.S. and go on my U.S. tour. Well, okay, so at that point, there was no question. He wasn't even denying that he was going into business. And, I put all this work in. And that was the last I ever heard from him about it. They never contacted me, never said anything. I've pretty much stopped listening to his podcasts. I can't stand what they're doing because he was a friend of mine, or I thought he was a friend of mine. And it's like, so many lessons to learn from this one. First of all, definitely don't do deals on handshakes, even with people you think are friends. Probably don't do deals with friends. You know, I could have told you that 15 years ago. I keep needing to learn this one. And why not just say nothing about it, I guess, is the next question. And, you know, I grapple with that a lot until I talked with somebody. This was a couple of weeks ago. I don't want to say who it was. No need to do that. This is a person that I like. I won't say a friend because I want to really reserve that word for very special relationships. But somebody that I like and I respect and I've had nothing but good, deals with. And excuse me, this person announced publicly and that he was doing a deal with some other person who I had also done some business with and had some bad experiences with a long time ago. And so maybe things have changed. It's possible. But I hadn't written about those experiences. And as a result, this person who I liked and respected didn't have all the information they could have had going into a business deal. Now you say it's not my responsibility, and you'd be right. It's not my responsibility. So I don't feel like I did anything wrong there, but I do feel like, that was kind of, how to put it, it was somehow related to what's going on here. And this is different because Adam and Ron tried to put themselves at the center of podcasting. Now, I think that's not going to work. I think that this thing's growing too quickly, and the big media definitely has a role to play here. And you see that yesterday, both ABC and NBC announced that they were starting to podcast. And the other thing that's working against them is that the technology really isn't that complicated, and it's pretty well known. Number two is they're not really that deep in technology. I mean, had they stuck with me, I think they would have been a lot deeper and we would have been a lot further along. Personal note, I really wanted to start a development organization, and that's why I'm disappointed. I want to, I felt, well, we had a real big lead and a strong position in this market that we were largely defining. And it shouldn't have gotten split the way it did. But I want you all to know that I didn't split it. I was ready to go into business with these guys. Now, in hindsight, I'm glad I didn't. I don't like the way they do business. But it's a shame because we had something really good going. So Yeah, maybe you can see why it's been confusing. It's been hard for me to sort of like tiptoe around this, but yet that's pretty much what I've done. I've tried to tell people that are like getting that are doing deals here to be very, very careful about the deals they do. And the cautionary tale is my tale. It's been my experience. I, you know, was told that basically without in not so many words that my work would not be compensated, that the risks that I had took and the success that I had achieved and that I had partnered with somebody who wasn't going to live up to their terms of the partnership. And lesson learned. In the future, I will definitely get it in writing if I ever do this kind of thing again. And there's some question in my mind whether or not I ever should. But I felt like it was important to clear the air and to try to put the actual data out there. And I know I'm going to get flamed for this, and that's fine. You know, I did a podcast a few days ago where I said basically comes with the territory. You know, there are certain people that just follow me around, and I, you know, I'd like a little bit of credit for like I got because Adam has those people too, and they've asked me to go on Dutch TV and Dutch radio, and I've declined every one of those offers. I have no need, no desire to make anybody more miserable. And I certainly don't want to capitalize on anybody's misery. And I don't honestly know what I would do if I were in Adam's shoes. I've thought about that. You know, what do you want from him? I really don't want anything. You know, I think it's way too late to put the genie back in the bottle here. And so maybe he wants to, you know, I also tried to stay quiet to give him a chance to try to clear the air, and he never did. So maybe that's what he wants to do now, is to explain why it is that, you know, he, never mind. Never mind. There is no why. Anyway, getting a touch of laryngitis, maybe, it seems. In any case, let's see where we're at. Yeah, 16 minutes. It's the new length. It's by the time we're done, it's going to be 17. Anyway, I'm off to Boston, and I'll be leaving tomorrow morning right around this time. It's about 5, almost 6 o'clock, 6 a.m. right now. I'll be leaving. I'll be going through Orlando this time, and I'm looking forward to, I hear it's really cold in Boston, and which actually, given that I'm in really hot weather here in Florida, although it actually has cooled off the last day or two, it's going to be kind of nice. And then the weekend after that, I'm going to North Carolina, and then I'm starting to think about July and August, where I will be going to California and to Europe and to probably a lot of places in between here and California. Thinking maybe of doing the Canadian route again, only this time starting further east. So anyway, that's my little story, and we're now at 17 minutes and 9 seconds, and I think we'll just leave it right there. This is Dave Weiner. It's May 26th, 2005, Morning Coffee Notes, and see y'all later. Bye.